on 702 ABC Sydney and ABC New South Wales. It's time for Saturday Talk About with Simon Marnie.
Indeed it is, and welcome to the Talk About Chair. In the next half hour, we're going to look back at the week on the wireless, what you were talking about on ABC Radio across New South Wales, across Australia, and on 702 ABC Sydney. In fact, joining us from that station, but somebody that once used to broadcast across this great state in the statewide drive, James O'Brien, now Program Director for 702 ABC Sydney. Welcome back to The Wireless.
Hello, Simon. It's 5 years since I've done Talk About.
Oh, you're kidding.
5 years as a mid-ranking bureaucrat.
Well, we'll find out how the mid-ranking bureaucrat saw the week on The Wireless this week. Joining us in our wonderful Western Plains and Dubbo studios, the presenter of Mornings, Dougald Saunders. How are you, Dougald?
Very well. Pumped up for a Saturday morning, Simon.
Well, look, I would hope so. You're going to get into the grapes of wrath, but also you're going to look at hip-hop, because what we don't know about Dougald is that he is DJ Dougald, yo my man.
Yo, yo, yo.
Coming at you. Dougald will be presenting a story, but also across Australia, and in fact, in just a few hours' time, well, no, a few minutes' time, Grandstand will be on air. One of the voices of Grandstand, Simone Thurtell. Welcome back to the Talk About Chair.
Hello. Yes, we've got Jeff Ugel coming in again to co-host Grandstand Active, so that's next hour.
Fantastic. Mm. I better get you through and ready to go. You'll have about 10 minutes
you'll have
to
me
say hello, Jeff.
You'll have me rocking and rolling. It'll all be good.
We're going
to
look at a 73-year-old sportsman that's just retired, but also we all think of sport as the more traditional ones, but it also takes into account those people that climb mountains, and we'll meet a rather interesting mountaineer. All this and more in Saturday Talk About.
Saturday Talk About with Simon Marnie.
But indeed, at this time of the year, from all over New South Wales, nay, all over the nation, people gather in Homebush Bay. James O'Brien, why?
The Royal Easter Show.
That's correct. And it is. It's a gathering together of agriculture where the city meets the country. And we at 702 had a big day out at the show. First of all, Deb Cameron, the morning presenter for 702, was broadcasting there, milking goats and all sorts of stuff. And then Richard Glover took to the show as well.
Yeah, Richard has this challenge he does every year. He really wants to, I guess, communicate to a city audience the idea that the things we take for granted actually come from somewhere. So one year, for example, he made a jam sandwich.
Hmm.
So he made some bread from scratch.
From wheat.
From wheat. He got the jam was made from berries off the bush and that sort of stuff.
The so butter churned from the milk.
It was fantastic. So he really wants to communicate that idea that I guess a lot of city people, you know, the milk doesn't just come from the supermarket, it comes from somewhere. And I guess he wants to create that idea that these things do come from somewhere and that there is still a really strong connection between the city and the country. I mean, it used to be that everyone in Sydney might have had some family in the country and vice versa.
Mm.
But that's not the case as much as it used to be. But, you know, I guess he wants to create the idea that there is still this connection, even if we don't always think about it.
I'm blowing a bubble to start with, and now I'm shaping that bubble.
Okay, now you've finished the lid now. What are you doing next?
If you don't mind, they can guess what it's going to be, because it is going to be more than just a teapot.
It's going to be a special shape, is it?
Yes, that's right.
Now, the tea to go in the pot, how's that going?
It will be ready for the teapot.
You guys can put your feet up. They are ahead of schedule. Now, you've got to supply us with some milk. Are you confident?
Oh, yeah. She hasn't been milked for a couple of hours.
OK, let me just put the microphone right near to where you were. You got the mic. The tea is ready. Here's the milk from the cow, and then in with the hot water. This is the moment of terror, I must say. Will this work? We can't auction off something that's smashed. In it goes. My goodness, it's held. There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, $1,700 times twice. Thank you very much for your bidding and competition. See you next year.
There you go. We've made a cup of tea, ladies and gentlemen.
There he was. The challenge was to make a cup of tea, and they pulled it off.
Absolutely. It took 3 hours. That was the 60-second version.
Right.
So I wasn't going to make you listen to a whole 3 hours again. But, you know, I think it's, for me, I find it just terrific to go to the shows I did on Wednesday and to watch the audience sits there for 3 hours.
Hmm.
And they watch the glass blowing. They watch and they actually get involved in drying out the tea. The tea came from northern New South Wales. For me, going to the show each year has mixed feelings because I'm from the country and I've spent most of my life living in the country except for the last 10 years or so in Sydney. And every time I go to the show, I sort of get a bit moisty-eyed, actually. Because
and
it makes
one
me
of the
think...
things that the show has to do is to retain those agricultural roots rather than become a big carnival or something like that.
And it is in some of the other cap cities, like Perth. I lived in Perth for a year and the show there is... Like it's basically, it's not very agricultural at all anymore. Same in Brisbane, it's just show rides.
The Ecker.
The Ecker. I had 4 years in Brisbane too. And the Ecker there is just basically a fun fair. Whereas in Sydney, it seems to have maintained that agricultural bent. And it's great to walk around and smell things. And
Dougald, you actually would notice a lot of your listeners probably aren't in the Western Plains area for a couple of weeks around Easter as they make their way to the Easter show.
Yeah, traditionally, I guess a lot of people that live around this region are members of the show society and head down every year. And interesting that James was talking about the fact that people like to reconnect with the bush and that sort of thing. We actually spoke to somebody this week who has a weekend called, well, it's a weekend, but it's called Farm Day, which sort of ties in with the whole show experience as well, where people from cities can come out to areas like Dubbo or Orange or Bathurst and stay with farm families. And again, it's about that reconnect with where real milk comes from. You can make butter, you can feed sheep, you can chase cows. And I mean, for people who live out this way on farms, it's a normal part of life. But for other people, there's still a bit of a hidden mystery, I guess, and it's great that the show can do that for so many people in Sydney. But I'll tell you what, yeah, quite a few people from this way like heading down to catch up with what's happening at the show as well.
But also it used to be a time for us as city kids to catch up with those, I mean, the Blairs in Narrabri we'd catch up with for 2 weeks of the year. But likewise then, on holidays, we'd head off to Narrabri every October school holidays to see them. So there, and I wonder whether that actually happens nowadays as much. I don't think it does. I think we go to the beach for our holidays.
Yeah, quite possibly we do. Certainly people from, well, certainly in summer, people from this region head to the coast because it's stinking hot, quite frankly, in this area in summer. So people try and escape to the coast, get to the beach and cool down that way. But during this time of year, it's a great time to be visiting other places. So I think people do love heading to a show no matter where it is.
It's interesting what you said, James, about keeping a show with those elements of the country and how important that is. When the equine influenza outbreak happened last year, it was interesting throughout the New South Wales region, all the little shows that still go on at Dungog, at Singleton, and all the way around. The smallest one I think I've ever been to was at Woodstock, which I just loved. And, you know, Sideshow Alley.
Is that when the Rolling Stones play?
No. Woodstock has, I think, 250 people.
Yep.
And Sideshow Alley was a very small caravan, and they still had somebody shearing a sheep, and the kids did the local vegetable faces, where they got
the
together.
And the decorate an arrowroot biscuit.
Absolutely. All of that sort of stuff still goes on. But when EI hit, it was interesting to see how the shows had to change and adapt because people couldn't move the way that they wanted to.
That's
with their livestock, and also horses were no longer... And they didn't feel the same. The shows were... They tried to compensate, obviously. They had... Some of them had rodeos and bull riding and things like that. But it wasn't the same as having all of those events where you had your horses and your livestock and all that sort of thing. And I think there's a real place, as you were saying, to keep the shows exactly as they are.
Nice sense of humour too in some of the stuff. One of my favourite things I saw was the pumpkin decoration.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And there's Homer and Marge Simpson. It's fantastic. The funniest thing. Nice sense of humour. And so it's not all worthy and, we must tell city people, blah, blah, blah. It's let's have fun. I had a beer at the Cattlemen's. That was great.
Yeah.
Hey, but apart from that, I was staying last week with a lady from the CWA who came down and stayed here in the city and did all the judging. They do that at their headquarters here in Sydney, which, of course, was absolutely packed out. And she was talking about how stringent the guidelines are for your knitting and your sewing and your applique and your embroidery. And there was one lady who was 2 mil outside of the borderline, and she was disqualified straight away. One had a cotton on it.
Well, I should actually declare an interest here because I do honorary work for the RAS, both as a judge of oysters, but also right at the moment judging the President's Medal. And the criteria for oysters, let me tell you, is very strict.
Can I just ask, the criteria, does it involve scoffing dozens and dozens of oysters?
Because
I'm all for that.
It's let me say, this year there were 23 growers that submitted their oysters. We tried 3 from each grower, so that's some total of 69 oysters in about 2.5 hours.
You little ripper. Yeah. Anything to wash it down with?
You have some sort of interesting thing that you do in between times so that you don't become sick and that you cleanse your palate, don't you?
You eat a bite of apple. then you have a little bit of a dry biscuit, and then you swill with fizzy mineral water to cleanse your palate so you don't get palate fatigue.
Can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah.
It's a family story.
Yeah.
I won't say which relative it is, but she's passed on now, so I guess I can tell the story. It's been a family secret for a long, long time. But a relative of mine, who shall remain nameless, was very good at flower arranging at the Lismore Show for a long, long time, and she won first prize for 20 or 30 years. What since emerged that was that she used to go around the gardens of Lismore, nicking other people's flowers.
Oh, you're kidding.
The great family secret, which is now revealed.
Oh, look. Up to no good at the show. This is Saturday Talk About. It is 16 past 11 on 702 ABC Sydney. Here is Karma County and Secret Country. Not so secret while the show's in town.
Other voices, other hearts have been sheltered in this house. Brothers' faces, mothers' hands have been pressed against the glass. Before the windows and the doors was just the earth beneath the floor. The shadows in the streets, we're living shadows in the bush. And a ceremony in the sand doesn't conquer a whole land. Wearing someone else's crown keeps your country in the ground. In a secret country, yeah. In a secret country. Secret country, yeah. There is always one more chance. There is always one more chance. To change the country of your head into the country of your heart. Doesn't conquer a whole land. Wearing someone else's crown keeps your country in the ground. In a secret country, yeah. In a secret country, yeah. Voices, other hearts have been sheltered in this house.
Other voices, other hearts have been sheltered in this house.
Brothers' faces, mothers' hands have been pressed against the glass.
Brothers' faces, mothers' hands have been pressed against the glass.
Before the windows and the doors was just the earth beneath the floor.
Before the windows and the doors was just the earth beneath the floor.
In the shadows in the streets, we're living shadows in the bush.
And the shadows in the streets, we're living shadows in the bush.
The ceremony in the sand doesn't conquer a whole land. Wearing someone else's crown keeps your country in the ground. The ceremony in the sand doesn't conquer a whole land. Wearing someone else's crown keeps your country in the ground. Secret country, yeah. In a secret country, yeah. In a secret country, yeah.
Featuring the vocals of Jimmy Little.
In a secret country,
that's Karma County.
Secret country, yeah.
The track Secret Country. 20 past 11.
Grandstand NRL. Grandstand Rugby League this weekend features some almighty clashes. The Dragons at home to the Knights. South Sydney against Manly, conjuring up great memories of the late 60s. On Sunday, the Warriors play the Roosters. The Sharks are in Adelaide against the Cowboys, while Parramatta plays Canterbury.
Grandstand NRL on ABC New South Wales.
Oh, those dulcets of Big Dave Morrow. Here we go on 702 ABC Sydney. Hey, Grandstand, whilst as normal in just, what, 40 minutes' time, next Saturday, the beautiful town of Tinker you're going to.
Yes, we're doing lots of outside broadcasts within New South Wales and Queensland this year, taking Jeff Hugel along with Grandstand Active. And next weekend, we're going to Tinker. So we're flying to Armidale and then driving to Inverell. And then from Inverell, we're heading out to Tinker.
Tinker.
And Nathan Blacklock is going to join us, the great rugby league player. He's a born and bred Tinger boy. And basically, throughout the summer, you would have heard on our Grandstand cricket coverage that we joined with ABC Rural in a whole process of a Me Change campaign. And there were different areas that people could enter into and say how they were changing their community. And if you had 10,000 people or less in your community, you entered that area. I think Tinger was in 1,000 people or less in their community.
Wow.
And they're regenerating Tinger, and not just by having a clean-up Tinger day, which they had a couple of weeks ago. 25 people turned up, picked up, you know, trash from around the place.
Quarter of the town's population.
They were so excited that 25 turned up, and they're really getting into not just their area, but also they have kind of like a campaign now where they have older people looking after the younger kids and getting them involved in sport and reading and education. So we're going to go out and see what they're doing. And
do you know where you're broadcasting from at this stage?
I think we're, because it's Anzac Day,
yes.
I think we're broadcasting from the Sport and Recreation Club, which I think is the only club in Tinger.
Wow.
We wanted to do it from the swimming pool because Jeff wanted to
do a bit of a
swim with the kids.
Yeah.
They're still raising the funds for the swimming pool.
Okay.
So, so the swimming hole didn't have a phone line, so we'll do it from the Sport and Recreation Centre.
You can catch Grandstand broadcasting live from Tinger next Saturday. But right now, this is Saturday Talk About. James O'Brien, the 702 Program Director, Dougal Saunders, the presenter of Mornings on the ABC Western Plains, and Simone Thurtell from Grandstand. And Simone, bit of an inspiration for everybody else. I hope that, you know, if I ever did pursue a sport, I'd be retiring from it at the age of 73.
Gary Player. And you know, the thing is, he's only retiring from major competition. He's going to play the seniors tour. He's just in such amazing form. But yes, earlier this week we saw him retire. He bowed out at the US Masters at Augusta, perhaps the prettiest tournament ever. On the odd occasion, the toughest tournament that you can come across. Age of 73. He didn't make the cut, but he said for the final 36 holes, so for the first and second day of his competition, every green he got to, he got a standing ovation, which is amazing. And on the final green, he got down on his knees and he described the whole experience to BBC.
Gary Player, that seemed like a very emotional moment there on the 18th green. How was it?
It certainly was, and it's very touching, and I'm so thankful for the great support that people have given me, not only here today. I mean, had a standing ovation on every hole for the last 36 holes, and but also there is support and love that I've been given by galleries all around the world, from China to India to South Africa to Britain and America, wherever I've played. And it's been a great joy. And I look forward to having a few senior tournaments to play in every year and coming back here as a spectator and playing in the par three and seeing these wonderful young men go from strength to strength, see the game of golf progressing as we all wanted it to see. And these young guys now, as I said the other night, must pass the baton on. And, you know, when I think of this tournament, I just say a man never stands so tall as when he's on his knees. And I'm on my knees today saying thank you for the talent that was loaned to me.
A career Grand Slam, 9 major titles. You won this in 61, in 74, and very famously in 78. Are you happy to leave it today?
Well, you know, it's always sad, but when you've had so much success and competed so many times, you cannot be greedy. And so I've had more than my share, and that I realize. And so it's there's a happy moment and there's also a sad moment, but that's typical of life. But I think the word that comes to my mind is grateful.
73-year-old Gary Player upon his retirement. I love the phrase, the talent that was loaned to me, and I saw his retirement press conference, and I just thought, wow, what a gentleman.
And you know, he is, and he's highly regarded, obviously, internationally for his golfing prowess. Now, in the early stages, he was certainly controversial. He initially supported apartheid, but has since obviously turned that around. He took Arthur Ashe, the famous tennis player, to South Africa. He's worked with Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu as well. He also was one of the first international players to call for drug testing across sports. To make it fairer and to make it a level playing field. And just towards the twilight of his career, people have loved him. That was his 52nd Masters tournament. Do you know they worked out?
Wow.
He has played a year of his life at the Masters. Isn't that amazing?
That is incredible. And nearly as good a golfer as Dougal.
Well, look, I was just thinking, he is amazing. And he's I've actually met Gary Player before, and he's a small man, but he's got this aura about him. He's one of these people, and being one of only five players to win the Grand Slam is just remarkable. Gene Sarazen and Ben Hogan and Jack Nicklaus and now Tiger Woods, of course. But all these players, you walk near them and you feel like you're soaking in something that may help you on the putting green, you hope.
So you know a little bit about golf, Dougal.
I love a bit of golf. I do love a bit of golf.
So you out on a Saturday or Sunday morning round?
No, look, I don't play regularly anymore. I used to in Sydney, but no, I've got kids and things to worry about these days. So golf tends to be one of those things you try and escape to when you can.
I grew up on a golf course, and the mischievous tricks and pranks we used to play on golfers never get laughs from golfers.
Funny that. Yeah, stealing their ball from the fairway, is that what you mean? Putting it in the trees?
Nothing so amateur like that.
Oh,
no,
they'd really?
Because they'd have to tee up to the second last green, and we'd collect all the balls from around the bush, and those that we couldn't sell. They imagine walking up, looking down onto the green, and not being four balls there, but 140 balls. Gee, Dougal laughed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those things, though, golf, that always amuses me, and this is probably where you got some of your language from, Simon, is that it should be called hit swear, because that's all that happens on a golf course half the time. Hit swear.
Hit swear. Swear. Hit swear. Yeah. And then when we were around the field, it was hit swear, swear, hit swear, swear. This is Saturday Talk About. Past 11 on 702 ABC Sydney and ABC Radio across New South Wales. A rather disturbing piece of news for winemakers this week, with the Australian Wine and Brandy Corporation confirming that what was thought to be a Spanish wine grape variety, Albariño, is in some cases a different kind of grape altogether. Dougal, you looked at this. Now, is it just that Albariño is called something different in other countries, or is it a truly different grape?
Well, no, it seems like it's a truly different grape, and I like the little bit of music you played there leading into this, because it has that Spanish flavour about it. Albariño, or Albariño, is a sort of a northern Spanish Portuguese variety that's been around for some time, and it's very popular in that region of the world. And back in the 80s, Australia started importing a whole lot of rootstock from areas like that, which ends up coming through California. But there are a few players around the country, including one in Mudgee, that had been purchasing what they thought was Albariño. It turns out that the CSIRO has just been doing some DNA testing, because somebody for some reason came up with the idea that something wasn't quite right about this grape variety, as in it wasn't displaying the sort of characteristics they thought it should. So we had a chat to the cellar master of Mansfield Wines in Mudgee, whose name is Malcolm McClellan, and here's what he had to say.
Slightly disappointed.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest news to hear. Well, there was word about it. Really, there wasn't, you know, you've got to take what the CSIRO or the nurseries that send you cuttings, you've got to take what they've sent you is in all in good faith as the product that you've purchased. However, the only real thing that we found that might have been questionable was the actual Albariño vine is a very vigorous vine and grows quite profusely during the growing season. And this particular one, we thought it may have just been a clone where the problem wasn't as vigorous. So it certainly wasn't as vigorous as what we would have expected. The rootstock that's been tested is probably exactly the rootstock that we've got. And our rootstock is from South Australia. It's a South Australian vine improvement rootstock. rootstock, so I'd suggest 95% sure it's probably the variety that they've said it is. As far as I'm aware, that rootstock came out in the late 80s. A lot of the rootstock that's brought into Australia comes through the University of California. So, yeah, I suppose it would be traced back there, and there would be questions asked, certainly. We're looking at growing quite a number of alternative varieties, different to, say, Chardonnay or Shiraz Cabernet, for that matter. And it was a variety that certainly we looked at that has been well written about in Europe and is a very good quality white grape. And it's certainly one that probably, being that it's from the parts of Portugal and parts of Spain, that fits into the catalogue of varieties that we grow. And climatically, it's fairly similar to this kind of region.
There you go. So that's the cellar door manager, Malcolm McClellan. And the interesting thing is that the grape that they think this is in fact a French variety, which is called Savonin, which is in its own right, I guess, a very well-known grape in that region, but it just isn't what they thought it was going to be.
So this means that the value of their stock plummets because it's not essentially the grape variety they're selling it as, or can it just become known as Australian Albarino?
Well, it can't be known as Australian Albarino, but I guess one of the questions I asked Malcolm was, well, what do you do now? Do you just rip all this stuff out, or do you in fact start marketing this French variety? Because, as I said, it's well known as it's made into a vin jaunir, which is like a yellow wine, that means in French, and it's made into like a sherry type of wine or just a plain varietal in France. So I said, well, why don't you start just doing that? And he's thinking about just doing that, because what they do at that winery is, as he said, they try and go for different types of wines than are commonly available in Australia. So this still fits that bill, but luckily, they haven't actually made labels claiming Albarino in anything yet, so they won't at least have to make all new labels. They'll just start from scratch.
And a couple of the wine growers saying that the wine that they have thought was Albarino that they've bottled and burnt is a damn fine wine anyway.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you've got a good drop, just change the label or remarket it, and, you know, why worry?
And an Albarino is not an Albarino, just one of the stories on ABC Radio across New South Wales this week on 702. ABC Sydney and ABC Radio across New South Wales. Here's Eric Burdon with War.
Sleep and dreamed. I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, and that I was the star of the movie. This really blew my mind, the fact that me, an overfed, long-haired, leaping gnome, should be the star of a Hollywood movie. I was taken to a place, the hall of the mountain king. I stood high upon a mountaintop, naked to the world, in front of every kind of girl. There was long ones, tall ones, short ones, brown ones, black ones, round ones, big ones, crazy ones. Out of the middle came a lady. She whispered in my ear something crazy. She said, hot flames of fire roaring at my back. As she disappeared, but soon she returned. In her hand was a bottle of wine, in the other a glass. She poured some of the wine from the bottle into the glass and raised it to her lips. And just before she drank it, she said, "Take the wine.
Eric Burden with War, and a song he wrote for all the Albarino growers in Australia, Spill the Wine. It is 23 minutes to midday on 702 ABC Sydney and ABC Radio across New South Wales.
Saturday Talk About with Simon Marnie.
Sitting around the Talk About microphone, Simone Thurtell, and very shortly we'll be looking at a mountaineerer, but also Dugald Saunders will be telling us how he's just down rock about all the eight count going down around his Dubbo area. But James O'Brien, this week we thought that we should actually put music back into the curriculum.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think with education for the last maybe 10 or 20 years, there's been an emphasis on maths and science and blah, blah, blah. But I think in the last couple of years, the humanities, people who are into the humanities, have wanted to fight back and say, well, look, you know, life is not just maths and science and business and making money. It's about, you know, enjoying the richness that life has to offer. And this week, the federal arts ministers, state and federal arts ministers, were getting together to talk about maybe a national curriculum for music and so on. Richard Tognetti, who's from the Australian Chamber Orchestra, originally from Wollongong, he's got speaking of wine, there's a wine connection with Mudgee. His wife's family is from there. Wine grape growers there. Actually, sorry, I digress. but he's basically said, look, that he thinks that music education should, in fact, be compulsory in schools. And he spoke to 702 ABC Sydney's Adam Spencer this week about this, and he argued that it should be part of a broader education.
If you study music, it's not a distraction from other subjects. Rather, it enhances your ability to learn every other subject, from mathematics, history, to English, and whatever subjects you're passionate about.
Why do you say that, Richard? What are the non-musical skills or the more generic skills that a music education gives you?
Well, as you know yourself, being a mathematician, I mean, pattern recognition is one of the best things for the brain, and that's primarily what music education offers in a purely intellectual sense. You get a tactile and physical education through learning an instrument. You get fantastic communication skills, learning to play in an ensemble. And again, I reiterate, you know, irrespective of what type of music you actually play, so long as you're playing in an orchestra or an ensemble of some time, or learning to sing in a choir, which is surely one of the best things you can do.
Riley's on the line. Riley, tell us about your flute lessons.
I started in year three, so I started in primary school.
Yep.
And I went throughout my entire high school year as well.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I continued with my music due to the great teachers. Like, the teachers that I had in primary school was just so, like, she was really enthusiastic about it as well. She loved to teach.
Ollie, how are you?
Hi, how are you going, Adam?
You saw your son's concentration improve when he studied music.
Oh, most definitely. In preschool, they weren't sure what was wrong with him. There was nothing wrong, but he just had problems with concentrating. He's in kindy now. He started, well, they have music as set curriculum at his school, and he started piano lessons as well. And he's just excelling in all subjects now. It's quite amazing, actually.
Great story, isn't it?
The role of music in education.
Yeah.
What about for those people in society, not looking at anybody in particular, but their first name's Simon, last name Marnie, who don't have a musical bone in their body?
Yeah, but I wonder why. I mean, is that because, you know, it just wasn't the right environment at school? Did you?
No, I'm a knucklehead when it comes to tunes.
See, it's funny because I think there are some aspects of, like, for example, art. You know, I was pretty hopeless at art. But then I actually started to paint and draw a little bit later in life. And once you realise that there's some basic... Once you learn the basic skills, then you can be creative.
What, that red goes on number two, that's blue right. goes on...
But I suspect that the same might be... I mean, a lot of people say I'm tone deaf and I can't sing and I can't play an instrument.
But not to your face.
No, not to your face. But I suspect that a lot of people, if you can give them an understanding, then they can be creative.
I can't even drum in time, though. I mean, that's pretty, you know...
But if you can get the fundamentals right, in the last year I've been learning a new language and I'm having to go and revisit some grammar, English language grammar, which I was never taught at school. But I've found that the harder I work with my grammar now, get that basic stuff out of the way, then you can start to be creative. I suspect the same might be true with music and art and things like that.
Isn't it interesting, though, that in this day and age, and we're doing it from a younger and younger standpoint with education, that we're only honing on what is going to give us maximum impact for a career?
Oh, yeah.
And that we're missing out on all these opportunities. I can't keep a tune. I love to sing, but I don't subject anybody to it because I can't hold a tune. And I was in the choir in high school, and I was one that ended up, in the end, mouthing.
That's always a good trick, isn't it?
But it was something that I just loved. And it's the same with, I mean, mathematics is no longer compulsory, and I know that we're talking arts here, but when did it become a point that it's only if you're ever going to 100% use it in your career once you've finished your education that you need to study it?
But that's it. You've got no idea what you're going to do when you grow up, and so spend 12 years harnessing as many sort of interests as you possibly can. Dip into as many, you know, information pools as are possible.
You weren't part of Milli Vanilli, were you, Simone, at all?
No.
Okay, just thought I'd check.
No, I wasn't either, but it was interesting. I mean, I'm not coordinated either. I'm a sports broadcaster, but I'm not coordinated, but PE was still something that was compulsory when I was at school, in high school, and so that was still something that got you going, that got you into it, that brought you into social circles in school as well that you probably wouldn't have been in.
Yeah, unfortunately, the social circles that I went into in PE, you used me as the target in branding.
Isn't it hard, though, because I played the piano when I was younger and I wish I could now. I think the key is to find something that keeps people who are sort of at that certain age where there is music, sport, other things to look at, to keep, a way of keeping them interested in a variety of things when you have to practice every day and do scales and it's like...
But that is the key, and I think Simone was touching on it, it's variety. Why do we want to grow this, you know, sort of like specific skilled child who is out of their depth when it comes to something else?
Instead of that all-rounded child who is quite happy to sit with you and listen to a different type of piece of music. We're going to talk hip-hop later, but, I mean, just experience. You don't have to like it, but just experience it.
When I meet someone, if I know that they are interested in maths and science and music and arts and all that sort of stuff, they're a much more interesting person than someone who has one speciality who bores you to tears. You know, it's just one-dimensional people, you know. The most interesting people in life are the ones who can surprise you with their broad range of interests, I think.
Music in our education, but not just music, I guess the whole brand and streams that people take in as they learn before they finish school. Just some of the topics you were talking about this week on The Wireless.
Saturday Talk About.
Speaking of one of those truly all-round people, the sportsman, the musician, the intellectual. I'm on
my way. Whether you're gearing up for a night out or winding down for a relaxed evening, enjoy this stunning collection of classic tracks from Tony Delroy's latest Nightlife CD. Music from Tony Delroy's Nightlife Volume 2. Available now from ABC shops, centres, good music retailers and online.
This is 702 ABC Sydney, ABC Radio across New South Wales. Sitting around the talkabout chair, we have James O'Brien, the program director for 702 ABC Sydney. Also, Simone Thurtell, who will be on very, very shortly with Grandstand and in our studios in sunny downtown Dubbo, Dugald Saunders. And when we return, a mountaineerer. Here's Mr. Lou Reed. And take a walk on the wild side.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked away across USA.
plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side. She was everybody's darling, but she never lost her head. Even when she was given head, she says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go do 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 do. Gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey, sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was Jim Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that fast. I said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doo 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 doo.
Side, Lou Reed on 702 ABC Sydney and ABC Radio across the whole of New South Wales. And Simone Thurtell, one of our most accomplished mountaineers, Andrew Locke, our highest achiever.
Our highest achiever, quite literally. He's, for the last 15 years, been embarking on a personal journey that he's called Summit 8000, which quite literally is to ascend all of the world's peaks that go above 8,000 metres. So
I thought he was going to try and climb 8,000 mountains.
No, and that would take a lot longer than the 15 years he has so far dedicated to it. But at the moment, he's in Kathmandu. He's waiting to head into Tibet, where he will climb his 15th and final mountain in Summit 8,000. It's called Mount Shishapangma. And he has had some of the hairiest walks across the last number of years. An interesting, interesting man. But I'm somebody who is very conservative. I'm never going to jump out of a plane. I'm not going to bungee jump. I don't like putting myself in an extreme situation to feel alive. Andrew is totally different. And here, he's climbed Mount Shishapangma twice before, but he's only ever made the false summit. So here he talks about the mountain.
I've been to the false summit twice before. The mountain's over 8,000 metres, and it's a fairly benign mountain up to that false summit. But to get from the false summit to the true summit, which is only, say, 25 metres higher, it's about 400 metres across a knife-edge ridge, a really technical ridge, and it has to be in good condition. So I know the way. What I'm hoping for is better conditions than last time. But in any case, my climbing partner is a really fantastic technical climber, and if we find we can't cross from the false summit to the true summit, we might even climb a completely different face on the mountain, which will take us directly to the true summit.
Describe and paint the picture for us once you get to that false summit. What is that ridge like?
Well, it's incredibly, incredibly sharp. And in fact, it's so sharp that if it was firm enough to sit on, I could sit on it like a narrow saddle on a horse, that narrow. And it drops 4,000 metres on either side. So the only way really to get across that ridge is in fact to straddle it and just slide along the ridge. But if the snow isn't very, very firm, then it'll just crumble underneath you and you'll topple one side or the other down. As I say, if you go down the south face, it's a 4,000 metre quick descent to base camp. If you go down the north face, slightly less than that, but it's far enough to give you a headache. And so you have the choice of just sliding along this really sharp, icy, rocky ridge. But if you can't do that, then you need to traverse the face, actually climb on the face below it, and just gingerly pick your way across for the points of your ice axes and the points of the crampons on your boots. But that can be loaded with snow, and that tends to avalanche. It's a choice between one evil or another, and either way, they're both very tough challenges.
While listening to Andrew, I just put Mount Shishapangma into the vision images of a search engine, and it does look like a pretty extreme mountain, 8,013 metres.
And imagine being there at that false summit, and you've got to get across that ice shelf, as he was talking about, literally straddling it. And I go on to ask him in the interview about, what about if you get halfway out there? How do you check that this thing is going to be safe all the way across? And he says you can't. So you could quite literally, 4,000 metres up, get, you know, straddling it, kind of crawling out there at your slow pace and trying to get across, get out there and it could just crumble and break. And he talks about that's probably why they won't go that route and they'll try and traverse it some other way, which they've not worked out just yet. But he's lost a lot of friends along the way. He still loves it. He's still passionate about it. He doesn't have a death wish insofar as he prepares incredibly well for the journeys that he takes. But if he does it and Summit 8000 is all over, he's going to celebrate, I thought, by popping a cork on a champagne bottle. No, by climbing Mount Everest alone without oxygen.
As you do.
He's a fascinating man, and it made me cringe because I'm not an adventurous person, but to listen to him in a sense is awe-inspiring.
Simone, can I just ask, how do they practice for that sort of thing? Any sport or endurance thing, obviously you're getting yourself ready. Does he just go for massively long walks in ice pants or something? I don't know. What do you do?
Probably that, but they also spend a good 3 months wherever they're going to climb in that area beforehand. So he doesn't just jet in the week before. He's been in Kathmandu for quite a while. He's been climbing mountains around the place to just get his stamina up and get himself acclimatised. So, yes, they take 2 to 3 months to live wherever they're going to climb. Mm.
There, and we will find out by listening to Grandstand how he progresses as he tries to climb all 14 of the 8,000-metre mountains around the world. This is Saturday Talk About on 702 ABC Sydney and ABC Radio across New South Wales. Now, I've just run out to the library, Dougal, to try and find some music to accompany this next story, but we don't have any
Good
8
luck.
Countdown rock freeze for you, boy.
Oh, dear, we've been talking about music and... Look, honestly, hip-hop is the latest thing.
Hmm.
I'm assuming most of the guests, apart from me, are all hip-hop artists in their own right as well.
Oh, look, Simone, she breaks every time she comes into the studio.
So good at it too.
Yeah. James?
Scandinavian trance is more my style of music.
Well, look, we've obviously got a fairly famous Dubbo person who's in a TV show at the moment doing extraordinarily well, all about dancing. And I must admit that the craze has taken over a little bit here. We were practicing some hip-hop moves like the head slide and the shoulder pop and the... I can't even remember some of the other ones. And we thought we should get somebody in. And it just so happened that during this week, we've had Arana Arts has organised some free workshops for this very subject, hip-hop. And it involves rapping, so writing rap and performing rap, also some of the technical aspects to hip-hop, and also dancing. So I was lucky enough to get MC Marzipan.
I get it.
Her name's actually Mars, so she turned it into Marzipan. Also Claudia Dallimore for the dance, and also Paul McIntyre, who's one of the youth development workers, to come in and help tell us a bit about hip-hop, which I think is a little bit misunderstood.
With rapping or with hip-hop or anything, it's not this thing of, like, you need to be gangster and you need to rap. Hip-hop is about expression. It's about how you dance. It's about how you dress. It's about what you say. You don't need to swear. You can be completely joyous. You can be conscious. It can be anything you want it to be. It's about fun and it's about expression.
Another big part of it, obviously, is the dancing.
Yep.
Claudia, you're in charge of that.
Within hip-hop, there's styles and genres, so there's, like, you know, there's a lot now. They've created a lot. There's crumping and breaking and locking and popping and ticking and waving. And
there's people going, what does that
mean? Yeah, and so those are all the components that make it up. And then there's sort of the way hip-hop's viewed a lot on commercial television and movies, and that's really choreography-based. And then you can have things like jams where it's really a lot of freestyles based. So
have you got any good moves that maybe I can just start working on myself? Can you just, I mean, it's a bit hard on radio, but is there a good move, like a good move that'll just shock the dance floor when I bust it out?
Damn.
Teach him to crump.
Teach him to crump.
What about popping?
No, can we teach him to do, what's this called?
The Beyonce booty shake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if we've got the right booty for that. Can you give us, how do you booty shake? Is that just getting the whole body?
Are you going to stand up?
You have
to stand up and do it.
Yeah. Stand up.
Well, you've got to stand up as well.
Okay. Is that all right?
Everybody
has to stand up. Okay, so spread your legs like a little wider than hips. Bend your knees.
Yeah.
Yeah, stick your ass out.
Yeah.
Put your arms up. Okay. And now pop in and out with your body. That's it.
Yeah.
And now try and speed it up. Go for it.
Oh. I'm not sure how that went, actually.
Yo, here I am in front of you. What, you don't know me, but I do know that you are gonna have to bust the rap for my class. Otherwise, I'm gonna have to bust your ask me a question. I'll tell you the answer. Don't wanna be a rapper, can be a dancer.
Yeah. This is a Hip Hop Doogsy calling in, and I did pick up some good moves, Holmes.
My main man, you know. So now you're basically out every Friday and Saturday night?
Yeah,
that's
look,
why you don't play golf anymore.
Exactly. I've changed my sporting regime. And look, to be honest, when you watch some of these dancers dance, Claudia gave me a quick demo herself. Like, they're pretty amazing what they do. I mean, I'm still a bit of a moonwalking fan. I can still do the moonwalk like Michael Jackson did, and a bit of robotics here and there. But I can't do much else.
No, have a go. That. Show us now, Dougal. Here you go.
Okay, so moonwalking. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just getting that slide.
That's nice.
Going.
Wow, how you put your head under your arms like that? I can't believe it.
Double jointed, you see?
Is your foot meant to be on top of your head? Oh, look. I want you to get home before you, break something.
Yeah. I just have visions of him in the black leotard doing the Beyonce thing, you know? I don't know.
No, we don't want to share that on a Saturday morning. Simone Wetton, that's our What's On person.
She's been, I'm coming.
Simone Thurtell,
you
have to get down to the Grandstand studio very shortly, up in about 15 minutes' time after the news.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us on a Saturday morning.
Thanks for having me.
James O'Brien, 702 Program Director. There we go. After 5 years, it was just like riding a bicycle.
It was, just like Content Director. It's all changed now. We're Content Directors.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. No, we don't do programs anymore. We do content.
Dougal.
It's been fabulous. Catch you wrapping around the traps, chaps.
We'll catch you. There's Dougal Saunders, the presenter of ABC's Western Plains. On 702, ABC Sydney and ABC Radio across New South Wales. The news time, 12 o'clock.